Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be here talking about cars. You're welcome to join us if you have a car question or if you have a dispute in the family about when should we do this, and he says this, and she says this, and the owner's manual says this, all that kind of stuff. Easy. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have five lines available. Excuse me. Gil is the engineer. He's up in the front of the plane flying. I'm in the coach section. He tells me what to do. He doesn't tell me what to say, but he counsels me about what not to say. And we've been together for, well, since 2011. So we kind of know one another real well, and he's the one that answers the phone. Be nice to him, and he'll say, what's your name? And he'll put you in queue, and then he'll say in my headphones, hey, Jeremy's is your next caller, something like that. So that's kind of how it works. Anyway, we talk about car repair shops on our show, and you know that I own one, but I talk about other car repair shops, and here's why. Years and years ago, I created a best car repair shops list because of the need for that. Everybody wanted to know who was the best, and I felt like I was probably somebody that could provide that. So in 2000, I think it was in, gosh almighty, 19-something, I'll think of it in a minute, 1994. Yeah, 1994, somewhere around in there, we decided to put together a geographical list and have repair shops, transmission shops, paint and body shops throughout the valley. Well, that's been a real success, and it's kind of it's something that I enjoy because I don't get complaints on the shops that I put on my website. If I do, I'll deal with them, but frankly, I haven't dealt with a complaint in probably more than 5 years. So Larry Harker's Auto Repair is one of them. He's been around since 1967. He's up at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He has a geographical area that's quite large. And what do they do well? Everything from oil changes to find out why on Thursday at 11:05 a.m. the horn starts honking. They can do all that stuff. So if you're in that general vicinity and you need fast, affordable services, you're going to meet Ellen at the front counter. Her husband Bob is running the shop, and those two own it. They have a technician named Jeremy that's a family member that this kid is a wizard like I've never seen before and probably a level I'll never obtain. So he's really, really good. So if you need an oil change or you've got something wrong with your car that nobody else can fix, then I would strongly suggest that Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th and Avenue in School, would be a good place for you to start. Right now, the auto repair industry, here's what we're up against. In the old days, when I was around in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, we had 3,000-mile oil changes. And your fluids were about 30,000 miles, and we pretty much did everything on your car in 100,000 miles. So we serviced all the fluids, all the belts, all the hoses. I mean, we just did everything. That was the focus of our shops and of our philosophies. The problem is that doesn't work today. Half of you have oil changes that maybe you need two a year. And usually they're anywhere between 8 and 10,000 miles apart. So if you drive 12,000 miles, you would normally go in for an oil change four times a year. Well, today, if you drive 12,000 miles and you have a synthetic oil in your car, I'm only going to see you once. That's had a negative effect on sales because we don't get to see you as often as we'd like to. And that's a negative effect on sales is because the rest of your car is pretty much untouched for the first 100,000 miles. So all we're going to do is rotate your tires, change your oil, and we're not even going to do a lot of the other stuff until the tail end of the first 100. So we're not going to service your transmission fluid every 30,000 miles. That was yesteryear. We're not going to service your cooling system. We're not going to service your air conditioning system. All of those things no longer need that. So the sales generated by your car with a new car with an oil change interval of 10, 12,000 miles, you just wiped out a whole bunch of my business and everybody else's business. So how does that affect you? Why would I bring that up? Is because my industry is making things up and they're not telling you the truth and they're betting that that you don't read your owner's manual. And I would suggest that here you got two different possibilities. You can put synthetic oil in your car, and some shops I've seen will call you back at 3,000 miles for an oil change. In reality, that's a 10 or 12,000 mile interval. So you're paying for a premium oil that allows you to go to 10 to 12,000 miles. And in some cases, like in Mercedes-Benz and stuff, it's even higher than that, up to 15,000. So the idea is that we're going to sell you a premium oil that should go all year long for you, but we're going to call you back every 3,000 miles. There's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with that. And don't think for a minute, especially ladies, because the guys, I can't, they're all going to think this anyway. If you change your oil on a regular basis and you take really, really good care of your car, and if you over-maintain it, it will love you and never break down. And nothing could be further from the truth. First of all, your car's not going to love you. Second of all, if you'd maintain it with the brand new fluids we have, it's going to last forever anyway. Today, we don't do anything major, in Mark Salem's opinion, we don't do anything major for the first 100,000 miles. All we're doing is we're going to do basically 10 oil changes. We're going to rotate your tires a couple of times. And we're going to deal with flats and whatever, air filters, fuel filters. That's all. That's all there is. So we don't have this big, huge income stream. Now, not too long ago, a friend of mine took his vehicle into an auto repair shop, not in the Tempe area where I'm at, and had an oil change done. And they told him that they were going to provide him with a top-notch oil. And it's a premium oil change. And I think the bill was $140, which tells me it's at least billed as a synthetic oil change. That's usually the price, somewhere between $85 and $140, $150, depending on how many quarts of oil you use. But the sticker in the windshield called my friend back at 3,000 miles. So they sold him an oil change that should go 10,000 miles between oil changes. But they put the call sticker in the upper left-hand corner of the windshield at 3,000 miles. That's not right. It really borders on criminal activity. You're lying. You're telling your customer something that isn't true to benefit you. It's fraud. So those are the kinds, but I also want to impress upon you that I'm talking about 10, maybe 15, maybe 20% of our industry. Most everybody else is playing by the rules. The rules will change, and it'll depend on who you talk to, but I suggest to you, I'm going to hang my hat on the owner's manual that was written by the car maker who knows that car better than anybody else. And like I said, in the old days, we always dealt with a major air conditioning catastrophe at least once or twice in 100,000 miles. We don't even see major air conditioning catastrophes anymore. We also had some belts and hoses changed, and we do those at 50s and 60,000 miles. And today, I'm telling you that our clientele is on 100,000 mile oil changes, or on a 100,000 mile interval for belts and hoses. And keep in mind, in the old days, we had three or four belts, and today we have one big serpentine belt, maybe two. And the belts are far superior than they were in the yesteryears as well. So when you look at the big picture, our industry's in flux, and we've lost a lot of our sales. And so, as with most industries, you have two choices. You can raise your prices or cut your expenses, and we're busier than heck. All of us are busier than heck, so we don't really have that excuse. Another example, and this is kind of something that's called Self-Defense for Car Expense by Mark Salem. A guy writes me a note yesterday and says, I took my car into the shop to have a service, and they told me I needed, I think it was $180 cooling or fuel system clean. A fuel system clean. I'll tell you what that is. That's a fuel system wallet flush. We're flushing your money out of your wallet and giving you nothing. There's never been a reason that we need to flush your cooling or your fuel system. If you've got a problem, we'll go fix it. If you got a problem, you got an injector that's not firing, or you've got a miss, or you've got something, we'll fix that. But to go in there and do $100 to $200 engine flush, cooling system flush, upper end cleaner, all that kind of stuff is just pure profit. There's no risk associated with warranty. There's no risk for anything. We're going to hook up a machine, push a button, walk away. It's going to inject this super-duper chemical that cleans up the engine and gives you visions of my motor's brand new from the inside out. and then it's going to go out the tailpipe, and you're going to get a big bill, and we basically gave you nothing. Now, we do use that for diagnostic purposes. There are times that you have an engine miss, and we've narrowed it down to where it's not spark, but it's fuel. So then we'll go in and clean the injectors to see if that made a difference. Is it better, worse, or the same? So a good example is we had one here not too long ago, and so it had a fuel system problem, and we didn't know what was going on. So we flushed the injectors, and it didn't make any difference.
Ooh.
So we're still looking for the absence of fuel on one cylinder, and we determined the camshaft is bad. So in the process, that was part of the process, is let's clean up the injectors, because 9 out of 10 times, if you have an injector that's plugged or acting up, if you flush the system, it will make it better. Now, sometimes it'll make it worse, but either way, you're home free, because all I did is flush the fuel system, and it made a change. I'm on the right track. That's what it's all about. So we do, you know, we've got motors out there today. You don't have to worry about your motor lasting forever. Here's the key to your motor lasting forever. It's real simple. Don't overheat it and don't run it low on oil. Every engine that we've replaced since 1979, when I started my own business in 1979, every motor has been damaged by the person behind the wheel. Every once in a while, and I say every, 99% of them, 1% of those motors just wear out because they've got a 500,000 miles on them. And they're using oil like crazy, they're leaking oil like crazy, and nothing but replacing the engine is going to fix it. So your motors, just change the oil on a regular basis. Don't ever run it with the gauge in the red, in the oil pressure, or in the temperature range. Don't ever run it. Shut it off. A tow truck's cheap. The motor's expensive. That's kind of how it works. So bottom line is you can over-maintain your vehicle. It's going to give you a false sense of security, and you're going to pay through the nose for it. So those are your choices. But you can go to marksalem.com and see my list of other good shops in the valley that I trust, and I promise you that they do a good job, and they're honest, and they're dependable, and they're not going to take advantage of you and sell you flushing your transmission, flushing your cooling system, flushing your fuel injectors, flushing your brake system. What else can I do? They can do all kinds of stuff. So when we flush, just remember, at the end of it, we quietly say, flush in your wallet. We'll be back. So it's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here talking about car and car repair issues and stuff like that. So if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. It's really easy. All you have to do is give us a call at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And it'll be real simple, real easy. Just grab a hold of the phone and ask a car question, and we'll take any kind of question. We're going to talk about year, make, and model and symptoms. So if you could start with that, year, make, and model and symptoms, or my wife and I have a dispute, and here's her side, and here's my side, or whatever. When we were talking about good shops, let me talk about automatic transmission exchange. Phil's been around Phoenix now since 1968. He's located at 40th Street in Washington. And as you can imagine, when you're brought up with the very first automatic transmissions that came out and were put in cars to the electronically controlled computer-operated transmissions we have today, they really still work the same. The difference is how do they know when to shift? And in the old days, everything had to do with vacuum, engine vacuum, and your foot feed. Your throttle, your accelerator pedal. And there was a cable oftentimes from the carburetor, and then it went to the transmission. So today it's just the same thing. We're still shifting the transmission, but we're using electronics, and it's watching whether you're going uphill, downhill, whether your foot's 50% on the throttle or 100% on the throttle. It measures the ambient temperature. It measures the speed. It looks at a chart and says at this speed, at this load, we should be in this gear. Blah. Phil's got it. As long as you got fundamentals, you know what to do. Automatic transmission exchange, 40th Street and Washington. I alluded the first break to talking about a gentleman that called me and said that they said I needed a fuel system flush, and I should probably shut that off. Huh? And that's my alarm telling me that I should need to change the water, and I'll do it the next break. Anyway, it's a fuel system flush. And that was something that was represented to them as you need this. Let me give you some self-defense mechanisms here. Whether you're a man or a woman or a young man or woman or no matter who you are, here's what you say. You're faced with the service writer who's telling you that this is a list of what you need. There is a couple of things Mrs. Jones, you need a fuel system flush. And that's $180. And we highly recommend that you do that. And Mrs. Jones says one of two things. Oh, what symptoms do I have today that you're going to fix with your $180 fuel system flush? Wow. That is such a great question. I didn't make it up. I found it from somebody else. But that's just a great idea. What symptoms do I have? Well, first of all, the service writer in most repair shops, dealerships, independent stores, small mom and pops, they're probably not going to have an answer. But they're going to go to the technician, and the technician's going to look at them and go, well, I don't know what symptoms. I didn't have any symptoms. I was looking at the odometer. We call that odometer surfing. So number one is what symptoms do I have that you're going to fix? Now, they may say, you have a check engine light. That means it's running lean, and we're not delivering the proper amount of fuel. The fuel system, what we would like to do is flush the fuel system to see if we've got a dirty nozzle on one or more of the injectors. And then we're going to look for a positive effect. So if we see this number go from 7 to 10, that's good. And you've got a little bit of a rough idle, and that's why we're suggesting this fuel system flush. Well, if you have a rough idle, that's a good idea. But they're guessing. They just told you that. That's okay. That's a good guess. But the idea that we're just going to do that. The second part is would you show me in my owner's manual where it lists that operation? And it doesn't. It just doesn't. I have never seen an owner's manual, and I'd be surprised if I'm wrong, but then again, I'm wrong a lot. The fact of the matter is I've never seen an owner's manual that has something in there that says you should flush your injectors. I just haven't seen it. It's a process that we use to diagnose stuff and to eliminate. So if you have an engine miss and we have a lean condition, otherwise the fuel's not being delivered at a satisfactory volume and pressure to the engine, then you go, okay, well, we probably should check the fuel filter because that restriction would shut down the amount of fuel that's going to the engine. And that's kind of what we're looking for. We need more fuel to the engine, and why are we getting a substandard pressure and substandard flow? Oh, fuel filter or injectors plugged up. Oh, let's go there. So check the fuel filter, and if that's not it, you say, I'd like to flush your injectors. I want to see if that makes a difference. See the rationalization there? It's a matter of, I'm going to use this as a diagnostic process. I'm going to see if this is going to affect it. At my shop, 50% of the time, the fuel injection flush will tell us what's wrong, especially when we use it as a diagnostic process, not as a maintenance process, but a diagnostic. So you've got a number 5 cylinder that's not hitting hard, and so you flush it, and all of a sudden 5 looks good, almost perfect. Well, we know it's the injector. That's all we did. We just flushed the injectors. So it's that kind of a thing. So it's difficult at best to warn you about all the stuff, but two questions. Show me in my manual where it says that I'm due for that. And number two, what symptom do I have that you're going to fix? Those are really tough questions to answer. And a lot of times the service writer is not of mechanical nature, and they'll not have an answer. And then you just politely say, I would suggest you politely say, well, I'll just step over here in the lobby until you get somebody to answer that for me. Because those questions are tough to answer. Anyway, when it comes to car repair, I would strongly suggest that you just simply determine what your oil changes are based on your owner's manual and adhere to those. I would tell you that most of the shops that I know run their operations clean, and they're good friends of mine, and that they don't have bad reviews, and if they do, it's one in a million. That kind of stuff. The issue from a real good point of view is
2 minutes.
We're going to rotate your tires usually every other oil change, dependent on your oil change interval. If you're going 10,000 miles, we're probably going to rotate the tires every 10,000 miles. So you have an oil change plus a tire rotation. Well, here's the deal. When we rotate the tires, we get to check your brakes. So you get two inspections for the price of one. And when we rotate your tires, we're going to look at your alignment. We're going to look at the tread. We're going to look at the underside of the car. But don't let that be a place for us to graze. Don't let that be. The question is, as well, now that we've rotated your tires, you need an alignment, and that's $130. Ooh. Okay, well, tell me, my husband's going to ask me for you women. My husband's going to ask me, how do you know? What did you see that I needed an alignment? Oh, that's a standard question. The problem is it's going to be hard to answer for somebody to answer, especially if all the tires show absolutely normal wear. They show normal wear. Now, it's also important for you to know that the front tires, when you turn right and left, the front tires lean a little bit out. So when you turn right, then the outer edge of the left front tire is going to kind of roll onto the road. So we're going to wear the edges of the front tires because they're on the steer axle. That's why we rotate them, is to get the fresh tires to the front and the tires that have been on the steer axle to the back. That's why we do that. So 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem, or perhaps maybe you were told something from your garage at your last oil change and you want to run it by me. This is what they said. This is what the cost was. And tell me what I should ask them or what I should do. And I'd be willing to guide you. Don't say the name of the shop. We'll just leave that between you and them. We just say you can say it's a dealer, an independent shop, or a chain store. That kind of falls into all those brackets. 602-508-0960. And it's all my fault. It's not Gil's. I actually had an alarm at the barn, and I had to go see what was the matter, and there was a skunk in the barn, so I ran right out. 35 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to join us. This is a car show. It's called Under the Hood, and we talk about your car, your problems. And if you have any questions, you're more than welcome to call us, 602-508-0960. I've got a caller, but I'm going to get something down real quick here. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th Street and Greenway. I've known Tom for about 20 years. He's really a good guy. He knows his stuff. He's honest. He's dependable. And the reason he's honest and dependable is because of his wife, Polly. Okay? I just tell you that in advance. So he's really good at vintage cars, motorhomes, and normal cars and trucks, normal transportation, stuff you see on the freeways every day. So if you live in that northeast Scottsdale area, the only shop I can recommend up there that actually passes the filter that I've created, and I created it in 1988, and it's still a good filter today, is Blackwell Automotive at 40th Street and Greenway. And who be on the phone? Gil?
I say hello to Willis.
Willis, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
I have a 2005 Altima, and the gas gauge is not functioning. I had the float change, but that didn't seem to do any good.
Oh boy. The time to check that is when you dropped the fuel tank on the ground and you took the assembly out of it, and when you have the sender in your hand, then your compadre goes up and turns the key on, and you disable the fuel pump, by the way, because otherwise you'll have some, a little bit of gas spraying around, but you disable the fuel pump, pull the fuse, or just unplug it, and you turn on the key, and then you take the arm where the float is at the sending unit, and you lift it up to full and drop it down to empty and see if the gauge matches the motion. That should have been done. Did you pay to have this done?
I did.
Was it their diagnosis that the float was bad?
I think they were kind of guessing by golly.
Okay. I'm not going to disparage them because I'm only hearing one side of the story, but I would be terribly disappointed if that was my shop. I would be terribly disappointed if you brought it in and said, I want you to look at the gas gauge and tell me what it's going to take to fix it. There would have been labor to get there, and at that particular point, we're going to check the float and the sending unit, and we're going to make sure that they're working. Now, the sending unit can be defective, and the float can go up and down full and empty, but if there is no signal forward, then that's a problem, and it can be a gauge problem. And so we can go in and we can do the float, and then that doesn't work. So we take the tank back down and we replace the entire assembly, and that doesn't work. And then we turn around and we go, what do we do next? Well, the gauge is next. So
okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Now, what it does is it will, when I fill it up, it'll show full, and then it comes down to about a quarter tank, and then that's it.
It doesn't drop below a quarter tank?
No, it does not.
Okay. Again, that's something that they should have done when they replaced the float, because the fuel tank sending unit sits in the top of the tank, and there's this arm that comes down, and on the end of the arm is a float with another arm.
Mm-hmm.
And so that float goes up and down, and on the other end of that arm is this rheostat, and it basically, it looks like a bunch of piano keys, and there's a finger on top of all the piano keys. And so what we're doing is we're just simply sending a signal forward. So if I'm on the left side of the piano, and that means that the float is all the way down, then it's empty. And then if I lift the float up and then it goes all the way to the right, then that means it's full. So I guess what's missing here is there's some diagnostic processes that were missed. And I would suggest, have you had good luck with the shop in the past?
I have, for sure.
Okay. I think what I would do, because of your relationship, in a nice way, it would sound like this. Hey, Mark, I brought it in, and here's the work order, and I think it kind of fairly represents what I said and what you guys did, but the problem is I still have the same problem. I'd like you to look at it again for me, but Mark, I'm not quite sure that I want to pay all the labor again. So could we just kind of pick up where we left off, and if there's any duplication of work, will I be billed for that? And hopefully the shop says, no, you won't. And say, okay. And then they're going to say, again, specifically, what's it doing now? And then you tell them. And then they go back after it again. So if I want to tell you something. My guys make mistakes all the time. I mean, not all the time, but my guys make mistakes. And it's just how the shop responds to them. In a defensive way, you're crazy, we fixed it, or I'm sorry, clearly we didn't do a good job. Can I have another look? And I'll call you when I spend your first nickel. So until you hear from me, I'm working on my dollars, not yours. That's what I think you should hear. Okay?
All right. Or would you, by any chance, have a recommendation as to where I could take it other than me going back to the same spot?
Okay. Well,
what do you think?
Oh, no, I can. Where do you live? Give me major cross streets.
32nd Street in Union Hill.
Probably Blackwell's. 40th Street in Greenway. Yeah.
Blackwell's.
Yeah, Blackwell Automotive.
40th Street.
And,
okay.
I think I would go in there, and you're going to talk to Aaron, or you're going to talk to Tom, or you're going to talk to Polly, Tom's wife, and you say, Mark Salem said, I shouldn't come here because you guys don't know which end of a screwdriver to use, but I thought I'd give you a try. Now, and most people going, well, Mark's setting up for his commission. I don't make a dime on your thing. They're not allowed to pay me. They're not allowed. There's no bird dog fees in my world. So it's just a nice way to say that crazy headed Salem is the one that sent me here. That's a nice way to say it. Okay?
I'll do that.
Okay. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. We got open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Five of them are open, and we'll be back in about 3 minutes. So it's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here every Saturday talking about car repair questions, car repair problems, and I can intelligently discuss cars and motorcycles and quads and diesels and motor homes and that kind of stuff. So if you have any of those issues, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me just tell you real quickly, I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. I've been ASE certification, there are 8 tests. If you certify in front ends or if you certify in transmissions, then you call yourself ASE certified. If you pass all 8 tests, then you are an ASE master. And I've been a master since 1991, and I've been certified since 1986, I think. So I've been around and I've taken all the tests, and I'm a guy today that has dirty fingernails and works on his own vehicles. So it's easy for me to talk to you because the best part about it is we get to compare notes and I get to ask you questions that are going to help me focus. So 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto Repair's up at I-17 in Bell. He's been a go-to shop of mine for a very long time. The story, it's always the same story, and I'm sorry if you've heard it before. Lady calls and says two different shops says that she needs a new engine. It's a 4,000 at one and a 4,500 at the other. I said, where do you live? She says, near Bell and I-17. I said, Kurt's is around the corner. I'd like you to go there and ask Kurt to just look at it. Does it, when you drive it, what's going on? Well, the red light's on. Okay. Is there any clattering? Is there any ticking? Does it idle rough? Is there any knocking noise? No, it's quiet. Good. How far away are you? Half a mile. Drive it over there. So Kurt calls me back and he goes, I fixed it. I said, did you put a new engine in it? And he says, no. And I said, what'd you do? And he goes, we replaced the oil pressure switch that talks to the gauge. The gauge was sitting on zero because the signal was defective. It wasn't because there was no oil pressure in the system. It was because the sending unit was dead, and it wasn't sending anything to the gauge that showed that there was no oil pressure. So it's pretty clear that Kurt saved this lady thousands of dollars by playing it straight and just replacing her oil pressure switch. That's happened a lot of the shops that you'll find my list on marksalem.com, but shops all over town that belong on my list, they've pulled those rabbits out of their hats before. So Kurt's Automotive, I-17 and Bells, is a good place to go. And we got another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Chris.
Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I have a 2006 Duramax, and I don't do a lot of driving, and I feel some pulsating in the brakes. I bled out the system, and do you think it could be the booster or the master cylinder?
Well,
going out maybe.
Let's go through the symptoms one more time. So when you're going down the road, and let's pretend you're getting off on the ramp because we're talking about highway speed. So you're doing 65, 70 miles an hour. You turn on your right turn signal. You get off the ramp, and as you come up, the pedal is vibrating underneath your foot, and the truck is shaking. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's we've got a problem with the brake rotors or the brake drums. It has nothing to do with the master cylinder. It has nothing to do with anything like that at all. So it's called a brake pulsation, and it's done because one of the rotors. Now, has anybody had the tires and wheels off of this in the last week, 2 weeks?
No, it's a 2006. Nothing's been done. It's been parked. I might drive it maybe once a week. And,
okay.
Yeah, I haven't had anything done with the brake.
Well, if the rotors, the brake rotors are, they're like big dinner plates, and we squeeze both sides of the dinner plate to brake the truck. And so they're supposed to run like a record that's perfectly flat. And if they don't, and everybody's put a record on their record player, and the record has a wave to it, it goes up and down, up and down. Well, that's a warped rotor. So this isn't a tough thing to do. Most shops would go drive it, and that they would probably put two techs in it, and Mark would drive, and Chris would be in the passenger side, and then we'd drive, and I would make it happen, and then we'd switch places, and at the end of the test drive, we're both going to agree that it's the front or the rear. And so at that point, then you take the tires off, and you put a dial indicator on the front rotors, and you rotate the rotors, and you go, oh, well, this one's out. And then you pull it off, and you go, oh, there's a bunch of dirt behind it. It's not seated up against the hub assembly perfectly. Take your blowgun, blow off the dirt, put it back on, put the tire back on, put the lug nuts back on, and you go, oh, yeah, much better. It's not wobbling anymore. Well, I just fixed your leak or your pulsation. But sometimes what happens is that the calipers stick. One caliper will stick, and when it sticks, it causes the inboard pad to rub the rotor. Well, the inboard pad will heat the rotor up, which will allow it to warp. So when we take the tires off of it and we look at the brake pads, we go, oh, boy, these two over here are worn evenly, but this inner one over here is worn a lot more than the outer pad. The inner pad is worn a lot more than the outer. Then we look and go, oh, yeah, well, this is the rotor. So we have to replace the caliper because it's hanging up, we probably put the shoes back on it, depending on how much life is left. So we replace the caliper, we put the shoes back on it, we go drive it, everything's done. So that process. Now, I don't know what's the matter with it, and I don't know if it's front drums, front rotors or rear drums, or if you have a rear disc on your Duramax. I don't know the answer to that. But
yeah,
I can.
Everything's rear, yeah.
Okay. So you can also, if you want, apply the parking brake, hold the release, get going about 40 miles an hour tomorrow morning on a Sunday morning when nobody's out there, and then apply the parking brake, but hold on to the release. Apply the parking brake and see if you can feel the pulsation in the rear brakes. And that doesn't mean if you can't that they're in the front. It's just one of the many tests. But is it shake the steering wheel left and right by chance?
No. Actually, sometimes at a stop, I'll feel the brake pedal actually go down, not really pulsating, but
fade away.
Pressure, yes.
Okay. Now that's a different thing. That's a different thing altogether. If you're sitting, if you come to a stop and your foot's on the brake pedal, and then you all of a sudden feel the brake pedal just slowly goes to the floor, and if you hold your foot steady, the car would start to move, then that is a master cylinder that's bypassing. But that doesn't cause the car to shake. That never causes the car to shake. It's just I hold my foot on the brake, and between the red light and the green light, all of a sudden this thing starts moving forward. I push it a little harder, and it stops. And I go, oh, I must not have been pushing it hard. Well, no, the master cylinder's bypassing. So we can't interchange those two things. Why don't you just do this? Take it to a shop and say to them, can I show you what I want you to diagnose? Can I take a tech? I can guarantee you I can make this happen. But not the pedal fade, because that could be an intermittent. I'm talking about the pulsation. Let's work on that first. So that would
okay.
be my what do you have a shop that you use on a regular basis?
No, I don't.
What part of town are you in?
I live in Peoria.
Okay.
Actually, Glendale.
Okay. We'll go to marksalem.com. There's a couple of shops up there. S&S Tires up there, a little north and west of you, and. You might have to come down to Indian School or Camelback to find shops. I think I have a hole right there in that particular area. But if you go to marksalem.com and you click on Best Car Repair Shops, there'll be a map and some geographical area. Maybe there's one close by where you work. Here's my promise to you. If you go to one of my shops and there's a dispute, and the dispute resolution people, like the Better Business Bureau or the Attorney General's Office or whoever, says to the shop, you need to give Chris a $200 refund, and the shop doesn't, two things happen. Number one, I pay the money, and I kick the shop off the list. So I guarantee you, you're going to be happy as long as there's some dispute resolution process available to both the customer and the shop. And that's something that's happened twice in 20 years, so it's no big deal.
Well,
anyway.
Just on a guesstimate, if it's the... The master cylinder, whatever, with the fade-in pulsating brake. What kind of price is that approximate?
Well, that's a HydroBoost system, so we're using power steering fluid to give you pressure, to give you power. So the power steering has to be set. Make sure that it's got the appropriate pressure. And I would think that you're probably going to be in the 500 or less area to diagnose it. Take the master cylinder out. Put a new one in, fill it with fluid, and bleed all four corners of the truck. But again, the fading to the floor is one thing, but the shuddering of the steering wheel back and forth or shaking of the whole car is something different. Those are two different
symptoms. Right, right, yeah. I think I notice it more in the rears, though.
Okay. And if that's the case, if you apply it, now, sometimes the rear brakes have drums built in, we call the hat. Even though the rear brakes are disc, the parking brake can be a shoe assembly. And that further compounds it. But really and truly, a senior guy like myself, and there's a lot of guys out there, I could go drive your truck and tell you what's going on as far as the shake is concerned. I mean, I could tell you which end of the car it's on. And then you're going to take it off and you're going to say, is there enough meat on the rotors and the drums to cut and make them true again? I need them. I don't want them to be egg-shaped. I want them to be perfectly round. And we're talking about thousandths of an inch. So a normal human hair is about 3,000ths thick. So if you have something that's 6 or 7 or 8 thousandths out of round, then that's your brake pulsation. Okay, good luck to you, Chris. Good luck. 602-508-0960. We're going to come back with another hour of fun and frivolity. So if you have a car question or a car problem or a symptom that you don't quite understand, then I'm here to help you. 602-508-0960. I was watching the news the other day, and at the very end of the newscast, they had been teasing about with respect to some car issue. And at the end of the newscast, we're going to tell you, you know, what you should do with the lights on your dash. They made a big deal about it, and I'm going to give it to you in a simple 2 sentences. Every light on the dashboard is either yellow, orange, or red. That's it. Yellow and orange are caution. You may continue to drive your vehicle. Red means stop now. That's all. You don't need to know if it's a check engine light, if it's a Stabilitrack light, if it's an ABS light, if it's a transmission light, if it's a coolant low light. You don't need to know any of that. All you need to know is the lights on your dash are the same colors as the traffic light. and a lot of guys are going to go, well, there's no green light. Yes, there was. In the 70s, there was Oldsmobiles out there that had a green light in the cooling system.
2 minutes.
And so, yes, we did. But we don't have that anymore. But specifically, there's 2 color lights on the dashboard of every car and truck out there. And they're going to be red or orange or yellow. Orange and yellow is caution. That's all there is to it. You can continue your path home. Red typically means you've overheated the heck out of it. It's low on oil. Something's terribly wrong with the engine. That means don't stop in a minute or don't stop in an hour. Don't stop on your way home. Now, pull off, get out of the car, and take a breath. So if I can't tell you how many times in my career since we owned a we owned our own gas station in 79 and I worked at a gas station in 1968. I can tell you people would say, well, I only drove another mile home. I know, but your motor is one big burnt piece of toast. So we're going to have to do something about the motor. I understand the dilemma. I understand running across things like that. But I want to tell you something. Today, we put a motor in a car not too long ago that was $41,000. $41,000. And that had been, I think it was overheated or run low on oil. The idea is a tow truck home or a tow truck to the shop is a whole lot cheaper than the damage you're going to cause by trying to get home after a red overheat light or a red oil light comes on your dash. So just, that's why we have cell phones. That's why we have cell phones. You should have your insurance company or your local garage on your cell phone, or you should know the name of a towing company that's referred to you by your garage that would be able to come and get you under those kinds of circumstances. Or if you have road service, you're home free. So 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We're going to be here for another hour, but we're going to take about a 3 or 4 minute break and do some business. The number again is 602-508-0960, and the lines are wide open. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we have another hour of car repair talk, and you're more than welcome to join us. Dan and Michael are first and second. I have 3 other lines that are available. Gil's on the at the studio, and he's the one that's making it all happen. So if you want to call in and if you want to reserve your place, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto. I've known Tom since long before 1983, but in 1983 he landed in Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area. He's right there at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. He's been around a long time. He's a good guy. I know he's honest. I know he's dependable. I know that his technicians aren't going to pull the wool over his eyes. I know that he knows right from wrong, and I know that if he doesn't, his wife does. So if you're in that area of Deer Valley and I-17, anywhere within about a, 4 or 5 mile radius, and you don't have a shop, may I suggest that you go to or call Action Auto Repair and go in for an oil change and just see how they treat you. See what their lobby's like and listen to what they say to people on the telephone. That kind of stuff. That's what it's really all about. Okay, Dan, you're up first, and then Michael, stay right there. But, Dan, how can I help you?
I was hoping you could fix my cracking Dawn, but you can't.
I can't. I'm sorry.
77 Dodge Power Wagon. As I sit at the light in drive, brake pedal will just slowly go away. It's close to the floor. I can push and get the pressure back, but it will fade down.
Okay. The master cylinder is bypassing. Every time you check the brake fluid, the fluid level has not changed, then the master cylinder is bypassing internal.
Wait. I checked it last month, and it was down maybe half inch.
And is it that way today, right now?
Oh, can't say.
Okay. Now, let me tell you why I'm asking you. There's only two reasons for the brake pedal to slowly fade to the floor. A hydraulic fluid leak at a caliper, yes, a wheel cylinder, the back of the master cylinder, at the proportioning valve, a minor leak, yes, is going to let the, and then, or the master cylinder is bypassing internally. The difference between those two is the state of the level of the brake fluid. If we've got an external leak, then we're going to have a drop in brake fluid. But if we have an internal bypass, we don't.
Very good. Okay, you know where it's going to end up. Kudos to Ellen and Bob at Harker's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a fact.
It's
exciting just to say Harker's.
No. That's fine with me.
They're great people.
Let me ask you a question. As you drive that 77 Power Wagon around, how many times people ask you if you've ever thought about selling it?
It's been quite a long time, a year or so.
Okay.
Been a year or so. It's nice and clean. Runs like a bat out of you know what.
Yeah.
Bob's tune ups and
yep
things, and it's kind of a righteous vehicle.
Well, and the old Power Wagons are very. I mean, most of us old guys. That was right after we got out of high school, and those were the trucks that were the monsters when we were in our 20s, and we all aspire to own one of those. So that's the reason I ask you that. I would have assumed that the answer would be that there's a lot of people that have said, hey, if you ever decide to sell that, here's my business card.
No.
Okay.
But I've been pushing it for a little over 25 years.
No, that's in the first generation of four-wheel drives that were just really big, bad trucks. And then, of course, we went into Nissans and the like, and now we're back into the big bad trucks. But anyway, thank you very much, Dan. Michael, how can I help you?
One other thing.
Okay, go ahead.
I talked to you last year or so, and you said if you ever want to get rid of the truck, to call you.
So. No, and that's okay. That's okay with me, and I'll still
that's
do
cool.
that. I'll help you market that thing, but I'll be one of the bidders. I can tell you that. So,
all right. Thanks for your time, Mark.
You bet, Dan. Thank you. Michael, you're up. How can I help you? Michael?
Bob?
Hello?
There you go.
Hello?
Michael, go ahead, sir.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Michael. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a brake problem on a 1994 GMC Sierra that I have not been able to actually isolate what the problem is.
Okay.
I changed the brake switch on the pedal. During that process, I found the multi-switch up in the steering wheel had a wire pull from the plug down on the column, and I found the cruise control had two wires that was actually cut. But and I changed the relay switch up on the under the hood. So
okay, now wait. Stop.
No luck.
Okay, stop for a minute. Are you having problems with the brake lights?
Lights, yes.
Okay.
They're not. When you press on the brakes, they don't come on.
Okay. Well, the brake pedal switch probably has just two wires, and it might have three. And we send power down there, and we use one wire to light the brake lights, and we use one wire to cancel the cruise control. So, and there sometimes there's a third wire that provides a ground or something like that. From the brake light switch, it goes to the turn signal switch, and it's then divided to the two taillights. this isn't a hard diagnostic for an old gray-haired guy to do, but that's what you have to do. You have to make sure that we have a signal coming out of the brake light switch, and then obviously it's going into the turn signal switch, but it's not going to the two taillights. That's that, and obviously somebody's going to have to track that down. What this 94 Sierra, is it a truck or is it a little Tahoe or what?
No, it's a truck.
Okay.
It's a 1500.
Okay. Now, do you have turn signals on the back end?
Yeah, turn signals, flashers, all of that works, just not the brakes.
Well, see, the flashers would be on the same. I'm thinking out loud here. The flashers are on the same circuit as the brake lights. And we're going to actually make that happen at the turn signal switch. And the I'm thinking out loud now. And the fact that the hazards work off and the back tail brake lights are flashing, that means the ground is there at the socket. So I got power and ground to the socket. And when I got hazards, then I'm flashing from park lights to brake lights, park lights to brake lights. The only problem I don't have is I don't have brake input. And if that's the case, then it almost has to be the brake switch at the pedal or a connection there out.
Well, like I said, on the multi-function switch on the turn signal there, I found one wire that was pulled out. And so I bought a new one, and I've installed that, and there have been no change.
Well,
only thing is the third brake light will flash.
Okay. Well, that's not really what you should have done. When you found the wire that had become disconnected, a wiring diagram would tell you what circuit that belongs to. And then I would have put a test light on that wire and applied the brake, because if it is a brake, if it is the signal from the brake pedal to the turn signal switch, then it would have lit up when I applied the brakes. So you missed some diagnostic stuff in the middle of all of that. But it's a process that has to be followed. I mean, you've already guessed and you missed. But what really confuses me is, and I would have to look at a wiring diagram, but I'm pretty familiar with General Motors, is how do we have hazards, which is a flash of the brake lights, when we don't have brake lights? And the answer is the hazards are at the turn signal switch, and they simply send flashing power to the taillights. But the brake lights is an input to the turn signal switch. So I can't fix it, but I can tell you the problem is between the brake light switch on the car and the turn signal switch. And you can pull up a wiring diagram on the internet and figure out whether it's the yellow wire, the green wire, or the purple wire. But that's the best I can offer you. All right, well, good luck to you, Michael. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. Gil's the one that answers the phone. Him and I have been together since we were little boys, and I have pictures of him when he was younger drinking beer. Gil, who's next?
Your next caller is Mike.
Mike, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. Yes, I've got a 2002 Ford Ranger Edge. My son just gave it to me probably 6 months ago and what have you, and it's in good shape now. I bought tires for it, and the body's in good shape and all that. The engine runs good. It's strong and everything. It's got 165,000 miles on it. But he kind of warned me. He told me that it shifts rough, okay? Once it takes off, you know, it just sometimes it'll hit hard or just shift hard. I mean, rough. Now, I just wanted to ask you, other than maintenance on it, if I do have to replace that tranny, what is the best procedure? Should I just get a rebuilt one, or should I have that one rebuilt? And what's the cheapest way, the surest way? I don't want to get somebody rebuild it and not rebuild it right, you know, if that's the case. You know?
Okay, I can answer your question, but I'm going to use the words you just used. The same person that diagnoses it is going to fix it. And then the result better fix the problem we went in after. You don't want 15 people involved in that equation. Shop A said it's the transmission. Shop B checked it out. And shop C repaired it as shop B said to. That is a recipe for disaster. So at 165, at 165,000 miles, I think what I'd like to see you do is go down to automatic transmission exchange and ask Phil
1 minute
to just drive it with you. He'll do that. And you say, or you say, I promise not to have you for more than 10 minutes. I can make this happen myself. So I'd like to drive first, and I'm going to show you what's going on. And then I want you to drive it if you want. And then my question is an estimate. Now, if it's never been apart, 165,000 miles, I'm not quite sure I'd do a whole lot of repairs. If you were going to do it yourself, if you're going to swap the transmission yourself, I want you to know your success rate's less than 50%. You don't have the necessary equipment to set up all the transmission. You can't flush the cooler. You can't flush the lines. You can't do all the stuff that needs to be done to stick a new transmission in the system. Then oftentimes on your O2, I think it'll automatically attach to the computer. Some of the newer model cars, sometimes you have to talk them into it. But in your case, it's probably just a plug and play on the transmission. But automatic transmission exchange would drive it for you for free and give you their ideas. But hopefully it's had the fluid and filter changed in it in the last 3 or 4 years. And if not, I'd probably start there.
Start there? Okay, because, you know, if I would take it, like, to a regular transmission place, they could say, well, I think the bands need tightening or whatever it might need. But at 165,000, you would go auto exchange, transmission exchange, and then will they do the complete job there? Do they have a shop, or is it just the transmission that they would give me for another place to install and all that, or
okay.
What's the deal on them?
Well, I don't know them. I don't know them, but I'm telling you, I don't want any part of that kind of a deal. So if as a shop owner, if Mike takes it and has somebody diagnose it, and then he takes it over to a transmission shop and they replace it, and then Mike has a problem, I don't want that truck in my shop. Because it's a disaster waiting to happen. And what's going to happen is those two guys are going to gang up on me and say, I don't know what I'm talking about, when neither one of them fixed your problem. So, again, the guy who diagnoses it, you show him what you're talking about, he diagnoses it, he fixes it, you drive it and make sure the problem's solved, and that's a home run. Same guy, okay. Step one, step two, step three. You get three different guys in there, most of us don't want no part of that. But I got to run. We'll be back right after this. It's 11:21. The lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960 and 0960s, because we're at 960, the Patriot here in Phoenix, 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair shops, I've identified what I believe to be is the crust of the best shops in town, and Automotive Dynamics is one of them. They've been around since 1982. Chuck Knighty and his family own it, and I've known Chuck's earlier than that. They provide good service. Their technicians are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bill, therefore that they can ensure their customers they won't sell you unnecessary parts or repairs. Sun City has a lot of auto repair shops, but there's only one I can recommend, and that's Auto Dynamics, and they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, or Grand and 99th Avenue. When it comes to fixing cars, I know that most folks that call the show, and you're welcome to call the show and we'll have conversations, want me to be able to fix it. First of all, or identify the fix. First of all, I'm only as good as the input. So if I say to you, does it pulsate, does the back end of the truck shake, and you say no, but really the answer is yes, then I'm going to make a hard left turn and I'm not going to be right in my guess. It's not in your best interest to call around like Mike did with his transmission problem. Call around and find out from guys what they think it might be, because all it does is just muddy up the water. I doubt very seriously if he has adjustable bands in his O2, adjustable transmission bands in his O2 Ranger that has 165,000 miles on it. His intermittent shift issue, where the shifts weren't the same, some were hard, some were soft. I mean, the basics, you'd check the fluid level to make sure it's correct. You'd make sure it's clean. Maybe you had to pull the pan and look at the pan to see if there's anything in the bottom of it. Because if there's pieces of transmission in the bottom of the pan, then everybody knows what's wrong with it at this point. It needs to be overhauled. Or if there's snap rings involved, or if there's clutch material involved, we need more information in order to come to a conclusion on what's the matter. So adjusting the bands, Mike, on your O2 Ranger is something you should knock out of your head. It's not something that you're going to do. That's not something that's going to happen. If it is a band problem that's causing the shift pattern to change or the shift firmness or softness to change, it's because they're worn out after 165,000 miles. After all, this has been around the equator 6 times. So it's not reasonable to assume that a transmission is going to go 7 or 8 times, which is 200,000 miles, although some of the newer ones are showing signs of being able to last that long. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My shop has a variety of 55-gallon drums. Most of them are blue. Most of them are marked with Chevron logos. And what I do is I take those and I make trash cans for people that want a 55-gallon metal can. So what I do is I cut the lid off the top, and then I put two nice handles on either side. Now, I'll tell you how strong these handles are. I can use my Bobcat, and I can use a piece of chain from handle to handle and pick up the 55-gallon drum. So I'm not putting cheesy handles on them. But if you want a drum, a blue drum with the lid on it, just like it's done, they've already been rinsed out, they don't have any oil in them or anything like that, then the drum's $15. If you want me to cut the barrel, the top of it off, it's $18. I'm going to charge you $3 to cut the top off. If you want handles on it, they're $8 a piece. That's what I pay for them at Home Depot. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. And if you'll send me an email, I'll send you a flyer that explains everything and shows you pictures of what all I'm doing. So it's what I do is I charge for this, but then I promise you 100% of all the sales are donated to charities. I pick the charity. And this is just a way to take something that we end up with a whole bunch of them and then try to make some money out of them and give it to a charity. So it's not uncommon for me to have 10 or 12 or 15 or 16 of these drums in inventory that are empty and that have already been drained. So if you need a 55-gallon trash can, whether you want just the drum, $15. If you want the top cut off, $18. And if you want handles on it, $8 a side, or just $8 or no handles, I don't care. And you'll pick them up in Tempe. That's where they'll end up. I usually bring them up to the ranch and fix them or do them. I cut them and make them here, and then I take them back down the next time I go down to town. So anyway, that's how it all works out. When we talk about diesels, we have Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate. You only have to meet Nate before you recognize that Mark speaks highly of Nate. First of all, he's a giant man. He has hands like tennis rackets, but he's the kindest and one of the smartest diesel guys I've ever met in my life. As a matter of fact, the other day I had a call from an insurance company that had a diesel issue question, and then Nate and I worked it out between the two of us. I brought some stuff to the table, and he brought some stuff to the table, but he's the kind of guy I lean on. I have his cell phone number, and I'm not going to give you that, but nevertheless, if you've got a Chevy, a Ford, a Dodge, and you've got a problem and everybody wants to guess, then Nate doesn't have to guess. He's capable of diagnosing your problem. He's capable of bidding it. He's capable of fixing it, and not for a penny more than the estimate that he gave you unless he called you first. So you can also go to Strictly Diesel Service and Repair on their website, and they sell lots of parts for diesels. And, of course, the website's available 24 hours a day. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. I sent somebody from Prescott to him the other day, and he calls me back and said he was really happy with the service. And, yes, Nate fixed his truck. So 602-508-0960, that's the phone number. We have five lines available, and if you'd like to call and ask a car question, then you can. And I guess we have a caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Lenny.
Lenny, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Lenny calling. Listen, I got a little story here. I want to ask what happened here. I was driving my car, okay, and I pulled into a Bash's food store to pick up some groceries there. Okay, When I came out of the store, I had to back out of the parking place. So when I put the car in here, started to back out, and I couldn't turn the wheel. What happened? I said, I knew myself what happened. I said, I'll bet that belt broke. So sure enough, I whipped up the hood, and then the power steering belt was standing still. So when I, where I got locked out is where this didn't break while my car was in motion. It broke while I was in that store shopping for about 10 minutes. Isn't that amazing?
Well,
it broke because the water pump had froze and the belt got so hot over the stationary water pump not turning got the belt to overheat and it broke. But the luck me, that didn't happen while I was driving in motion.
Yes.
That's where I lucked out. What
yes.
do you think of that?
Well, I think that you probably haven't had any nasty thoughts of your neighbors lately, and I'm thinking that you probably behaved yourself, and I'm thinking that I would like to have that luck all the time too. But folks, what he's saying is everything was fine, and he pulled into the parking lot. When he shut it off, then the belt got shed, we shed the belt at that point because the water pump's locked up, or locking
right.
up and locked up then. So then when he gets in the car, he has no power steering. The bad news on that would have been he's driving down the road, the water pump locks up, that puts the cooling system into a dip. We're going to melt down here pretty quick. He loses power steering. Depending on the car, he could also lose power brakes. But the issue is he's got a calamity on his hands. All of a sudden, he's got dash lights that are lighting up that are yellow and red, and he's got no power steering, and he's got a big problem. So through the grace of God, he had to deal with that problem in a parking lot of a shopping mall, which is a lot better than on the road. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We have another half an hour or so of the car show. You're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that Mark Salem refers people to for a variety of reasons. It's not that it's the only good shop in Mesa, but he applied and he passed the muster. The problem is when you apply and there's a serious reason why that doesn't, you wouldn't be on a list that started with best car repair shops. So Thompson's has been around. Brian and Thelma, owner-operator. You'll find Thelma at the front counter and Brian in the shop. Both of them came from gas station families back from the 60s and 70s in Mesa. Their parents. So they've been around the smell of gas and oil for a very long time. They know right from wrong. They're right there on Main Street just east of Stapley. They do a good job every time. So if you're in Mesa and you're looking for a shop, they're certainly centrally located. They're right there at Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. We were talking about those drums, and my wife said I should have said something. The guys with the garages that kind of like where they hide out on nights and weekends with their buddies, drink beer, work on cars, stuff like that. This trash can that's blue that says Chevron on it, this is the kind of trash can that car guys want for their garages. If you want the can, it's $15. If you want me to cut the top off, I can do it for $3 more. And I can do a nice job because I've done enough of them. So if your guy or if someone out there that you know needs a nice trash can for basically $18, and again, it's donated to charity. And you can write your check to your favorite charity. I'll just send it to them on your behalf. So nevertheless, that's what we do with our drums. And it used to be that there was a deposit on the drum. And the deposit on the drum was $10, $15. Well, for whatever reason, they're not doing that anymore. So that means that my shop is stocking these drums. Sometimes we'll end up with one or two a month. And then, of course, after 6 months, pretty soon you've got a whole corner of the back parking lot filled with empty oil drums. So in reality, though, let me tell you that the top oils we squirt into cars are in tanks of 300 gallons. And we just pull a gun off the ceiling and we dial in 5 quarts and we just stick it in the car and we just pump 5 quarts in. That way, from an environmental point of view, as far as I'm concerned, I don't have to deal with the cardboard boxes or the plastic containers or the caps. So it's a real savings of time for us to squirt 5 quarts of oil in your car as opposed to dealing with the byproducts of the oil. So that's why we don't do quarts of oil like that anymore. We just use them in a big dispenser. We have actually 6 500-gallon tanks, and it has transmission fluid and a variety of oils that cover virtually all the cars that we use. So rarely do we actually pour a quart of oil into a car out of a plastic container. So that's the environmental part of our business, and And when it comes to car repair, there's a couple of things that we have talked about today, and you're welcome to join us if you want, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you have a question or something. If you take your car in, my advice to you is whoever is the predominant driver of the car is the one that needs to write down what's going on. So if it's the husband or the wife or the high school teenager or the young lady who's in college or whatever, they need that those words need to come from their mouth, and their phone number or email address should be on that piece of paper. You can't imagine how happy we are in the auto repair industry when someone brings us a piece of paper where someone has taken the time to say, okay, this is how you make it happen, or this is when it happens, and this is what it's doing when it makes this happen. That kind of stuff. That's just a wonderful communication device that we don't get as nearly as often as we want. The real problem is the husband comes in and tells us about the wife's car that he never drives, and he's going to tell us what he thinks she said or what he thinks she meant. Now, most of us gray-haired guys that have, you know, grease on our hands that's embedded for the last 40 years, we're going to call the wife anyway because we need to talk to the driver. We can't have this daisy chain communication. What is it that it does? Tell us how we should make it happen. When does it happen to you? Is it hot or cold or fast or slow? When does this leak appear? Is it after you park it?
1 minute.
And what part of the car is it in? Is it underneath the right front headlight, the left front headlight? Is it kind of the center of the windshield but a little bit in front of the windshield? What color is the fluid? That kind of stuff. Those are the ones that really get hard to fix, because we're working off of a symptom where we're not really sure, because the husband will say, oh, that's engine oil, but the husband's wrong. It's not. It's power steering fluid, or it's transmission fluid, or it's coolant that's dirty that looks bad like oil. So there's all those dynamics, and the most important part of this is the communication between the person at the shop, which is typically the service writer, and the husband and or the wife or whoever the predominant driver of the car is. Other than maintenance. Maintenance is pretty easy. You know, I'm bringing it in for an oil change. Would you look it over good and call me with any needs that you find? Here's my card. Here's my cell phone number. Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, how much is that and when will it be done? Those are okay questions to ask. We're not offended when you ask how much our oil changes are or anything. Or when I say us, I mean most of the people in our industry. 602-508-0960. We have five lines open, and you can grab one right now. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have four lines open. Harold's got one. You're welcome to him. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Harold, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. If you got a couple minutes, I'd like you to expound a little bit about what's going on with these electric vehicles. If you watch TV and read the paper, you get the impression that there's some pretty serious problems like fires and what have you happening. In fact, I understand that if you own a Bolt, GM has recommended you don't even park it in your garage. Do you know what's going on here?
Well, first of all, this is nothing new to our industry. Ford told people that had a problem with a fuse holder not to park their vans inside their garages or anywhere near their houses because the thing would catch fire in the middle of the night and burn the house down. So Now, I am not a fan of electric cars yet. I think we've got a long way to go to get them to where they're dependable. What they have been able to do is they have been able to cultivate owners, and I'm making fun of my friends now, but I'm not going to name them. They've cultivated friends of mine that are so dyed-in-the-wool Tesla and Volt and this Prius. These guys wear underwear that have the name of their car written on the band in the front. They tell everybody how great they are and how fast they go and how they do this, and they're safe and on and on. And it just makes me sick, because this is the same crap we heard with front-wheel drive cars. It's the same crap we heard when we came out with electronic ignition. So as far as electric cars are concerned, they don't hold a big part of the market. I mean, they are a very small part of the market. We've already gone from 5 and 6 and 8 and 9 and 10 miles to the gallon to cars out there that are popping 20s and 30s and 40s. So I don't really care what I work on. I don't really have a dog in this electric car fight, but you're right. Their failures are front page news because their failures are of the magnitude that's going to cause somebody, possibly cause someone some physical harm or cause the house to burn down. So yes, they have to deal with the batteries. They have to deal with the weight. They have to deal with the idea that this car may only have 200 or 300 mile range. And you have to deal with the idea that somebody up in the cloud is controlling your car and has the ability to shut it down and stuff, although they have that ability today, too, on gasoline-powered cars. So if you have OnStar or Ford's web access or Chrysler's, if someone steals your car, then under the very best of conditions, the police will call Ford or Chevy or Dodge and say, here's the VIN number. Can you see the car moving? Yes. Here's a court order. That car is running from the police and we'll shut it off. And that rarely happens because the hoops that the dealers or the car makers put you through are just not worth the, by the time they get done, everybody's had a birthday and the people that were running from the police are already in South America. So yeah. I don't, right now, I'm not against the electric cars. I think some of the safety features in some of the cars are attractive. I think what bothers people the most, and certainly I've said this for myself, is you get the electric cars, and boy, they go downhill real fast, but they seem to forget that they belong in the right lane when they're going uphill and there's a line of cars behind them. But it feels to me like that they really, we should all avoid the fast lane is for passing and the slow lane and the right lane is for everybody else. But the aggravation of being in a line of traffic from Payson to Phoenix on Sunday afternoon and having some electric car in front of you that on the downhill he's charging his battery so he's going kind of slow and on the uphill he's trying not to use a lot of electricity so he's going kind of slow, it's somewhat aggravating. To me, I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but I do predict this. Tesla appears to be in the lead by a long ways. I think Tesla will be a mainstream car certainly in the next 5 years, but I don't believe that Tesla will ever break 5 or 10% of the cars on the market, the cars on the road, not in my lifetime. That's what I believe. And then the idea that we have the hybrids, which has a gasoline motor and an electric motor, that even complicates matters worse because I'm not quite sure the environmental benefits are there when we talk about using the gas motor to power the car and using the gas motor to charge the battery. I'm just a little confused about that. So,
I was talking to a lady who had one of the smaller Teslas. And she was complaining that when she used the air, the mileage range went way down.
Yes. 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 Absolutely. That's kind of what we miss. Tesla has done a great job in being able to give the driver information. Just an outstanding job. I've got two or three of my friends that wear Tesla underwear. They have Tesla written on their foreheads with black magic markers. They defend the car at every way, shape, or form and every opportunity. I am just so sick and tired of hearing about Teslas. But these are friends of mine and I'm the car guy and so we have these kinds of conversations. But the idea is that we're still got a long way to go. But Tesla certainly has come out of the barn with a really fine car, but there is a process, and they're giving the driver a lot of information, and they're telling the driver, you better stop it because you're not going to get to Sholo from Phoenix if you keep driving that way. So, but I, there's still the rubber tires. There's still a cooling system in there. There's still air conditioning that we're going to use electric motors and electricity to run the compressors instead of a fan belt. So we've got, and then you got electric motors for the steering, and you got electric motors on the tires, and then you've got brakes and ABS. You got all this stuff, and it's all centered around a battery. And the problem with that is that yes, we can reverse the the polarity, so to speak, in we can charge the batteries on the way down the hill, but I'm of the opinion that the electricity we make going down is the same as or more of going up the other side of the hill. So I'm a little confused, but right now I'm not kicking Teslas out of my fleet. They're welcome to bring them in for service, and we do a lot of service on them, of tire rotations and stuff like that. But it's just going to have to shake out. This is no different than front-wheel drive cars. This is no different than fuel injection. This is no different than computer-operated cars. We'll get through it.
It's going to take some time.
Yeah, and I think that Tesla's kind of setting the pace for all of this. Tesla's not anything I would want, because I can't haul a horse trailer with the Tesla. And let me tell you a funny story. I have two or three friends that are just rabid Tesla people. And if they're listening right now, their panties are wadded up and their voices are high. They are just flipping out because I'm not going to answer their calls. But they just are rabid about their Teslas. But the problem is, yeah, they'll go fast, and they do a 0 to 10 miles an hour faster than any other car made in the world, or all these stupid statistical stuff. They're very safe. I will give them the Tesla. They're very, very safe. But they're just not where they want to be, but they are making good strides. And I don't care that everybody's going to the moon or going up in space anymore. I just wish that we'd find a car that would balance that out. So I don't know where we're going, but I think we're in the right direction. But I think Tesla is so far ahead of the Toyota Prius and the Volt that it's the difference between Fred Flintstone and Microsoft. That's the difference between where we're at now with Tesla and the Prius and the Volt. So, and this idea that we're going to have 80% of our fleet in electric cars in so many years, I'm really struggling with that. But then again, I don't care. I'll just deal with whoever's got a car and I'll fix it for them. But that's it. Okay?
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Good luck, Harold. Thank you. I'll catch a lot of flack for what I just said, but you know what? It's okay. It's okay. God bless the people with Tesla. I mean, if you do something wrong to the car, they'll send someone to fix it. I think that's a good idea. I would like to have the automatic road service with an electric car, just because. Oh, gosh. And anyway, I'm going to get off the electric car thing, because I got to do that. Okay, real quick. A friend of mine calls me and he says my daughter's in Prescott and she can't get her car started. Is there anything that you can give me advice? And I said, just have her call me. So she calls me and I say, step in front of the car, turn on the headlights. Her husband's in the car. She turns on the headlights. I says, what are they? And she says, they're yellow. And I said, okay, now have him try to start the car, and I want to know if there's a click. Just one click or multiple clicks, or if there's no clicks, but more important, I want to know what the headlights are doing. She says, okay. So she instructs her husband. He hits the key. The headlights go to nothing. He lets go of the key. There's no cranking of the engine, and the headlights come back on yellow. Okay? That's a voltage problem. So I said to her, you should be able to jump start this car, and you should be able to get it someplace and have them check the electrical systems. But because it's a 3-year-old car and you've never replaced the battery, it has symptoms of what a bad battery would cause, but you need to have the car thoroughly checked out. So come to find out, is we were right. The battery was old. The battery was replaced, and everything is fine. So on FAQ 28 on my website, marksalem.com, there's an FAQ 28 that you should print and put inside your car in the glove box, and it tells you how to help yourself diagnose what's wrong with your car when it doesn't start. And when I say start, that means it doesn't go rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr So it does it doesn't crank, or it does crank but doesn't catch. Those are all the idiosyncrasies of when it, because when people say my car doesn't start, the question is does it crank over? No. Okay, well, it's not cranking. Okay, yes, that's good. Now we're on the same track. As opposed to, it doesn't start. Well, it cranks over normal, but it doesn't catch. Okay, well, that's a start. So see how it's important that we become front counter people and advocates for our customers. So when we talk to them and they say the car doesn't start, we have to determine, is this an electrical problem? Is this the absence of fuel? Is it cranking over? Is it not cranking over? Or is it cranking over but doesn't run? Those are the kinds of words that are really important to those of us in the industry. So another thing I want to share with you is the environmental position of many of us in the automobile industry would surprise you. I'll give you an example from my shop. We have won just about every city, local, county, state, and government award for environmental practices. I'll give you an example. We have huge tanks I talked about with oil, fresh oil in them, so that we don't throw away boxes and we don't throw away plastic containers because we buy it in bulk. And that way I can squirt 5 quarts of oil in your car in about 11 seconds. And I don't have to go get 5 quarts, take the caps off, pour them in one by one. There's a tremendous time savings for me, but at the same point, I am not contributing to the trash in the planet. Waste oil, we all sell our waste oil. And they use it in freighters and stuff like that. So all of us save our waste oil and we sell it. Many of us recycle our coolant. Many of us recycle metal and aluminum. So there's a real push from the environmental point of view for many shops in the Phoenix area. I'm proud to say that we've won a lot of awards, and we started when we first built our building in 1994. As a matter of fact, we used vegetable oil in our hoists, and today that's now the standard, and that was more than 20 years ago, almost, 26 years ago. So those are the kinds of issues. The auto repair industry is no longer what you used to see on television with the guys with greasy hands and stuff like that. If you look in most shops, the technicians are actually wearing gloves because their wife would prefer their hands look a little nicer when they go out to eat if they would wear gloves. And many of us provide that as well. So my website is marksalem.com. Mark with a K, Salem, like the cigarette.com, and you can always send me an email at mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, especially if you want a drum or a flyer about the drums, if you want to buy something for your hubby, and he's got a man cave somewhere, and he wants a Chevron oil drum for trash. We'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT 960 AM.